Need your daily fix on mixed martial arts?
We're going to kind of recap Bellator 155.
From UFC 198.
Who's who.
Kind of a controversial decision.
And who's not.
I couldn't figure out why, and then it hit me.
Well, don't you fret, because Golden State Media Concepts got you covered. Get your daily dose of MMA podcasts. Everything from the UFC, Bellator Fighting Championships, Extreme Cage Fighting, Invicta Fighting Championships, and so much more. Join us as we talk about some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts. We've got you covered here on Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to the Golden State Media Concepts Mixed Martial Arts Podcast, the podcast that covers everything mixed martial arts. And today we're coming off of a pretty big weekend with a lot of things going on, a lot of moving and shaking. I'm your host, Tate, and joining me is a good friend of the show. We got William here as well.
Howdy.
All right. Howdy. That's a different one. All right, so William, we had a busy week, and also, you know, a sad couple of days as well, with the passing of Muhammad Ali, which we talked about on our last show, the greatest of all time and someone who was very special. And then just a day ago, we lost a member of the MMA family, which was we lost Kimbo Slice.
It's a really sad loss. Kimbo passed away.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, you know, Kimbo came on the scene, you know, like a bolt of lightning. He was very famous for being, you know, a backyard brawler. And he turned his backyard brawler YouTube and sensation into an MMA career, which, you know, kind of was impressive. You know, he wasn't a classically trained MMA fighter, but he definitely left his mark on MMA.
Kimbo was definitely one of the stars that brought MMA to the mainstream attention. With his fights on CBS, and even when he got onto The Ultimate Fighter and brought it to UFC, he was a huge draw. And it's just a really unfortunate loss.
It really is. You know, as one of the things I was talking to William about before the show started is the fact that, you know, you look at that Kimbo Slice Data 5000 fight, and, you know, it was a very, very popular fight, and a lot of people were really excited about it. But it's actually a very tragic fight. And when you look at it, you know, since that fight, Dada had a number of heart attacks and almost lost his life. And Kimbo, you know, out of nowhere, he did die and of a possible heart attack, which is very sad.
Hopefully in the future it allows the screening processes and the testing processes to get into organizations and fighting organizations to be really more sound. And hopefully they look into that future and really improve on that process.
Yeah, I agree. With that, you know, Kimbo Slice passed away at 44?
42.
Our thoughts and prayers go out to his friends and family. And when we come back, we'll be covering, recapping UFC 199 and all the news that went on this week, because there's been a lot. Stay with us, and we'll be right back.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's GSMCpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
All Okay, we're back. And we're here. We had one heck of a card in UFC 199. This could be crazy to say this, but UFC 200 has a hard. That's gonna be a tough act to follow going into UFC 200. We had the main event, which was Rockhold versus Bisbin, and we went over our prediction. We're gonna talk about our predictions. I sit there and there was just a massive upset. I was expecting the count to be knocked out very early in the fight, so I was just kind of waiting on the knockout, and the knockout happened, but it wasn't Bisping. It was Rockhold, and I was just in utter shock.
I definitely had Luke winning as well, but the thing about this sport is that anybody can go down, and if you get a little bit too cocky in this game, as Rockhold did and admitted that he did, you could be saying lights out.
At first I was just stunned. I was completely and totally stunned because I never thought this could, in any scenario, this would happen. And one of the things that kept playing in my head is kind of like what Chris Weidman was saying, where this could be the easiest title defense in UFC history. And, I was kind of thinking the same thing. And, man, when it happened, I saw it happen right before the punch land. I saw the opening. I saw when he threw the punch, and I was like, oh, my God. And it just nailed him, and he dropped, and it was over. I knew it was over right then and there. But if you look at, this was actually a good thing for UFC. And here's why I say this. Bisping's been around forever. He's been a hard fight. He's been willing to fight anyone, anywhere, anytime. And, he's never gotten a title shot. So, and there's been times where I thought he was definitely due a title shot, but he just never was given one. And so I kind of looked at this title shot as more of a lifetime achievement award. And, with all fighters, everyone should look at Michael Bisping and just say this. When given an opportunity, whether, at the beginning of your career, end of your career, in life, anytime you're given an opportunity, do everything you can to make the most of it. And that's what I felt like Michael Bisping did.
That's the fantastic thing about this sport. It's actually my favorite thing about the sport. Everyone has a chance. I mean, in the history of the sport, we've seen Matt Serra knock out George St. Pierre, Conor get beat by Nate Diaz, Holly Holm knock out Ronda Rousey, and the list goes on in terms of people really capitalizing on their opportunity. I mean, even when he lost, Alexander Gustafsson made a name for himself when he fought John Jones.
You're right.
And going along that, you just have to fight your best, fight to the level of your competition, and if it's a championship fight, raise your level to meet them. And we saw that with Michael Bisping, and it was really a culmination of his career's work.
You know what? And also, another thing I would always say is this. If you're a fighter and you feel like you've been put in the ring with someone who's less of a fighter than you, don't play around with them. Don't toy. Take him out. Because in MMA, first off, anyone has a chance. I never even thought of Bisping as a really hard-hitting fighter. He's not known for his knockout power. But, anyone can get knocked out at any time in MMA. So don't toy around with anyone. Take them out, go home, and call it a night. But, and even Rockhold said, I took him a little light. And that's kind of crazy considering, if I understood this correctly, Bisping knocked him out once before in practice, in a training camp. If someone's knocked you out in the past, you want to eliminate them before they can even think about knocking you out. And so I thought Rockhold started a lot slower than I was expecting him to.
Bisping was very candid in the post-fight press conference. He said that Luke has a tendency to lower his right hand. and all throughout practice, Bisping was practicing with Jason Perillo, his boxing coach, and they practiced a left overhand, and we saw how that ended.
It worked to perfection. I tell you what, though, these two guys do not like each other. I was listening to the post-fight interview, and these two ended up getting into it again. I thought they were actually going to end up getting into a fight again after the fight. I don't know if you saw that or not.
I did. What Rockhold was really mad about was how Michael was celebrating. And in their previous fight, right after he submitted Michael Bisping, he picked him up off the canvas. Whereas with Bisping, he was jumping up, running around the ring, saying, "Are you there? Do you know where you are?" And that's what really ticked off Rockhold.
Well, you know, sometimes when you get upset by a guy that you thought never could beat you, you get really, you're embarrassed. You're very sensitive. I honestly don't really have a problem with what Michael Bisping did. I just think it was a little bit of a sour grapes on the side of Rockhold.
I totally agree. I definitely think it wasn't out of the norm, and he was definitely sportsmanship-like in the post-fight conference. And what really brought the argument to the head was how Luke was bringing up the past and things along those lines.
You know, it was. You know, I'm still a little shocked, but I'm really happy for him. You know, when you just go think about his career, you know, and I don't think there's very few people out there that anyone really put money on Bisping until the only, you know, there was money that came on, which kind of balanced out the Vegas odds because of the knee injury, which was not a factor in the fight at all, in my opinion. But you know, I don't think anyone truly thought that Michael was going to win. Now, with that being said, you know, what was your thoughts on, did you think the knee injury had any effect on him? Because I thought he looked good in the ring.
I definitely think it was more mental, the way that Rockhold approached the fight, that really ultimately lost it for him. But I definitely did see some signs where he was hesitating in terms of attacking because he couldn't put all the weight on his knee. But other than that, he definitely had a chance. He was definitely the favorite going in, and while I was watching, he looked great. It's just he wasn't pulling the trigger. He was kind of playing with Bisping, and that's what really led to him losing the fight.
Okay. Now, the next fight we're going to go into was the co-main event, which was Dominick Cruz versus Uriah Faber. And this was a fight I was really looking forward to. And, you know, when it first started out, the first round went exactly the way I thought it needed to go to favor Uriah Faber. I thought he was applying pressure. He was trying to take it to the ground as much as possible. He was trying to make it kind of a rough and tumble fight. But then from that point on, you know, it's one of those things where like one shot changed the whole fight. And once Faber got nailed, I just thought he was no longer in the fight, and the fight totally changed.
I definitely agree. I think the fight was a little bit too late. I mean, it was scheduled for 3 or 4 years ago, and it should have happened then. But what happened in that first round is that Dominick initiated a wrestling-heavy approach, and that really surprised Faber, and he wasn't really ready for that. And then in the second round, Faber really got nailed because Dominick capitalized on the fact that he didn't know, that Faber didn't know what Dominick was going to do. And when you don't know what he's going to do, that's when he got rocked.
Question, though. Does anyone know what Dominick Cruz is going to do?
I mean, when you look at that Dillashaw fight, if Dillashaw had stopped headhunting and started hitting the body and kicking his legs more, he had a great shot. And I feel like, I mean, I want to watch Mighty Mouse fight him again.
You know what? That's a fight where, you know, I don't want to have that fight happen, but that's a fight that would be a very intriguing fight. The reason why I don't want to see Demetrius Johnson fight him is because I think Demetrius Johnson has a chance to set the record for, you know, most title defenses and put it so far out of reach that it can never be touched again. You're looking at all-time greatness in his division, and I don't see anyone in the UFC in his weight class and any other, you know, and I watch a lot of other, you know, UFC or other MMA divisions, and I don't see anyone that's going to touch Demetrius Johnson as long as he stays in his weight class.
He is literally clearing out the division. They're going down the line of the rankings and seeing who he can fight next. And he honestly, in the point of his title reign, that he's fighting people again because there isn't anybody left that he hasn't beat.
Exactly. Well, going back to the Dominic Cruz Uriah Faber fight, did it go kind of way you expected it to go?
I thought it was going to be a little bit closer, but that punch really changed the dynamic of the fight. I mean, Faber wasn't the same after that. He all throughout the lead up to the fight, he was underestimating Dominic's power, saying that he couldn't finish him, and he showed a little power in that.
I think Faber was really surprised that, you know, that layoff, and I noticed this as well. The layoff that Cruz had actually made him stronger. I don't know. Do you agree with that?
I do agree. He looks more filled out, and his punches have more of a sting to them.
Yes, he's not the same fighter. I look at him as the same fighter, but yet better. This whole layoff thing actually, I thought, made him a much, much stronger man. With that, what do you see? And I know Faber's think is tossing around, maybe retiring. But what do you think is the future for Faber if he decides to stay?
He's going for the big fights. I mean, he's going for the fights that he's always wanted in the past. But honestly, I hope that he rings off a couple more wins and ends off his career on a very high note. He really deserves it as a longtime perennial champion and contender for the title. I just want to see him go out with a bang.
You know, this is just my opinion, and I've thought this for a couple years with Uriah. I would like to see Uriah go down in weight, which it would be kind of maybe a little tough, but I've always thought I think he would do a lot better at a lower weight class than he is, than the weight class he's in right now. What's your take on that?
I'd like to see that, but I don't see him doing that well against Demetrius Mighty Mike Johnson. But if he wants to fight people lower weight, I think he can do quite well as well.
Yeah, I think he could. I think he could get himself back into, you know, when Demetrius is looking for opponents, I think Uriah could get a couple of wins and another shot at the title with Demetrius. This is my little pipe dream, I guess, because I don't see Uriah actually doing this. Now, with Dominic, what do you see in his future?
I see him defending either against Rafael Assunção or TJ Dillashaw in a rematch, or obviously there's always a Demetrius Johnson fight if the money's right.
Right now, as much as I don't want to see this fight, it looks like it's going to be Demetrius Johnson and Dominic Cruz. Do you disagree, though?
It really depends, because Demetrius Johnson is locked up in a fight with Wilson Hayes that's coming up, as well as the fact that they're making a Ultimate Fighter season where the winner is going to get an immediate title shot to fight Demetrius. So he's kind of...
Oh, that's right. That's right. That opens up... that fills out Demetrius' card, which means that, you know, you could be looking at that rematch then of Cruz versus TJ again.
Exactly, and I'm looking forward to that. That fight was a lot closer. I had it three rounds for Cruz and two rounds for Dillashaw, but given their knowledge of that, the fight could change completely in the second fight.
Okay, now when we come back, we're gonna finish off a few other fights that was on this card, because this card was just full of action and just amazing fights that I really enjoyed. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be, visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Okay, we're back. And, you know, we just got done recapping the UFC main event cards, which was Michael Bisping's, amazing knockout and capturing of the title over Luke Rockhold, Dominic Cruz retaining his title against Uriah Faber. And now we're going to talk about some of the undercards. And the first one, I'm going to talk about is Dustin Poirier versus Bobby Green. What was your take on that fight?
I think Dustin looked fantastic, and Bobby didn't have that great of a game plan for him. He started talking to him, and that's what ultimately led him getting knocked out.
Do you feel like Bobby Green came in a little too confident, a little too cocky, but didn't have anything to back it up with?
Well, he brings that to a lot of fights, and in other occasions, that's actually helped him. He uses kind of that mental warfare to get his opponents lulled into his game. But Dustin wasn't playing around, and he really brought the fight to Bobby and pressured him.
Dustin was mentally strong, and he was, he was just ready for this fight. He really took it to Bobby Green and really finished Bobby Green. He really finished him.
Things are looking good for Dustin Future. I hope he gets a really big name for his next fight.
I was just going to ask you, what's next for Bobby Green? Because Bobby Green he's starting to make a name for himself with this win. And
Dustin Poirier.
Thank you. Thank you for correcting me on that one. Dustin Poirier made a great name for himself. And the fact that, you know, his next fight is going to be a definite, you know, top contender, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'd love to see that. I mean,
He deserves it, yes.
Face him off with the Rafael Dos Anjos and Eddie Alvarez loser, and then see how he faces against them, and then that could catapult him into a title shot.
I kind of like that. I mean, Dustin definitely deserves a real top flight fighter, and if he wins that, then I you got to put him in a title contention after that. The next fight, let's talk about the next fight. Hector Lombard versus the legend Dan Henderson. Now, I'm going to be honest, I never thought Dan Henderson had a chance. Well, Dan Henderson always has a chance. But I just thought, you know, with Dan being older, his skills have definitely started to slide. Hector Lombard is that guy who packs a lot of punch. He's much younger. I was expecting Hector to take Dan out. And you never underestimate a legend like Dan Henderson, because that was a one heck of a fight. It was a seesaw battle. It was bombs thrown everywhere.
At the twilight of his career, he's always bringing that right hand, and that's what's most dangerous about him, and you can never count that out. And Hector started treating it like a Rock'em Sock'em Robot fight, and he just kept on standing still, and he paid for it.
Yeah, I mean... It went where at one point I thought Lombard was going to go out. Then there was a point where I thought Dan Henderson was about to go out. And then Lombard went to sleep. I mean, he really went to sleep. I mean, he was unconscious.
It reminded me of the of the Fedor fight that he had, that Henderson had in Strikeforce, where it was a back and forth battle. Both guys are rocked, and then someone went to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and then the next fight, which was a really entertaining fight, it was Max Holloway versus Ricardo Lamas, and that fight was I think it really showed the skill that Max Holloway has. I thought he put on, just an excellent performance. It was a great fight. It wasn't boring, but Holloway's skills were just so far superior. Give me your take there, William.
Yeah, I thought that he dominated the fight. He really showed excellence in pressuring Lamas against the fence. He showed great takedown defense, and at certain points he almost finished the fight. But what was the highlight of the fight was towards the end with 15 seconds left.
Now, with that, and what we're going to talk about is that last 15 seconds. I'm a big boxing fan, and one of the things that, a lot of things people get on boxers about is not finishing strong. Well, if you watch this fight and you look at Max Holloway, you look at that last 15 seconds, he pointed to the down. He pointed to the canvas and just said, "Let's stand toe to toe and let's do this." And they went at it.
It was like Hagler Hearns.
I was just gonna say Hagler Hearns. It was just like they just started throwing bombs at each other. And here's the crazy thing: Max Holloway, he won all three rounds, and yet there's nothing to gain by standing toe to toe with him. But he initiated it. He pointed to the ground because he said he looked at the guy in the eye and he saw that the guy wanted to go. And so he's like, "Let's do this." And they really went to banging at each other.
That was a true fighter's ending.
Yes. And anyone, if you did not watch the Max Holloway Ricardo Lamas fight, just go back and watch the last 15 seconds of the fight. You'll be in heaven. Absolute heaven. It's definitely worth seeing. With that, was that enough to put Holloway into the title contention?
Oh, he's been in there. It's just the fact that the division is kind of held up with the Conor situation and the fact that there's an interim title in the mix with Frankie and Jose Aldo fighting each other. So he's on a 9-fight win streak now. And, whoever comes out of that, and if there isn't any issues with that, then he's going to get the shot.
I hate to say this, but it's a little unfair to someone like Max Holloway. You've beaten every single person that they put in front of you, 9 in a row. Who else has a contender who's ran off 9 straight wins and hasn't gotten a title shot?
Nobody else.
Now, then the second thing is you're in a division where you have a champion who is on his second fight, which we're going to talk about shortly, and he's yet to defend his title in his own division. I have a problem with that. I know Conor's a big name, but Conor needs to defend his title or give his title up.
I mean, that's what he criticized Jose Aldo about when he was a champion, that he doesn't defend his title because of injury. I mean, you're not defending it because of an injury to your pride.
Yes, matter of fact, I was against the fight with Diaz all the way around because of the fact that this is not a fight, even in the rematch, should be at 145, not 170. 155, not 170. Because you have a guy here who's ran off 9 straight wins, he's going to have to fight a minimum of 2 to 3 more times, because you got Diaz who's fighting Diaz and Conor McGregor that's going to fight again. You have Edgar, they're going to fight, and then the winner of those two fights are going to fight each other again, and whatever happens there, they may end up having to fight again. So this guy could easily have a situation where he's 13, 14 fights in a row and never get a title shot. And if, God forbid, he loses, then he's out of the title picture. That doesn't sound right to me.
I mean, Holloway said that he's fine with it. He knows that the division is kind of in limbo right now, and he's okay with just fighting and just keeping fresh and staying within it. And it kind of reminds me of back in the day when Tito Ortiz was the champion of light heavyweight division, and Chuck Liddell wasn't getting a shot because Tito was turning it down, and they just wanted to keep on lining up fights for Chuck, and he just kept on rattling down and knocking him out.
Yeah, I agree with you. The one thing, though, I would, if I was Max, I would just stay, make sure I stay in shape, because if an injury happens, he's a perfect insert in there for any of these fights that are coming up. Do you agree?
I definitely agree. He has a bright future in the division and in the sport.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Okay, now that's covered UFC 199. Another thing that kind of, there's a couple of things that kind of happen. We're going to deal with the, more of the UFC news part of things. And the first thing with the start of UFC 199 was, I was really happy that they announced that a new inductee was going to be coming into the Hall of Fame, and that was Don Frye. And Don Frye, you mean he's one of those? He's a legend. He's one of the original UFC legends. I think he's a perfect fit. They've announced, Big Nog, the gentleman which has slipped my mind right now, who's the original founder of UFC. Do you remember his name?
I can't remember
off the top. I could pull the notes up really quick here. And then it was Don Frye. What's your take on Don Frye?
Don Frye was a real pioneer of the sport. He was really at that point after Dan Severn and kind of during the Dan Severn era where you saw a mix of two styles. He was someone that could take it to the ground. He was a former wrestler, and he could stand up and bang. And that's really saw the hybrid evolution of the sport that really escalated and continues to this day.
No, I agree. I mean, you know, when you go back and you look at all those, the old tapes, the UFC tapes, you know, you can definitely, you know, he's just a big part of, you know, of the UFC, the early days, which is kind of the more wild, wild west days. You know, you think of Don Frye, you think of Gracie, Ken Shamrock, guys like Tank Abbott, which I was never really a Tank Abbott fan. But, you know, those guys. And I definitely think it's a good decision to bring him into the Hall of Fame.
I definitely respect it as well. I'm happy that they're ignoring that he went over to Pride and all of these Pride fights, which is now a part of the UFC. But for a long time, they were stopping people from getting into the Hall of Fame. And you're seeing with Nogueira and Frye that they're really not stopping them from being elected in the Hall of Fame.
In order for it to be a true Hall of Fame, you have to put the real Hall of Famers in there. And I don't care if, you know, yes, they were in the UFC and then they went somewhere else or not. If you've had, in order to make it a true Hall of Fame, if you've had a Hall of Fame career, you have to be able to be allowed in. And so I think it was a good decision to bring Frye in. You agree?
I definitely agree.
Okay. Now, another bit of news that kind of happened is at UFC 199 was a big shocker. For, I think, like two shows in a row, I'm actually talking about Ariel Helwani. And I'm a big fan of Ariel. Ariel, I thought, has always held himself, has always done a good job, and I've always had so much respect for him. And one of the things that happened this weekend was the big announcement that Brock Lesnar was going to be in UFC 200. And that's huge news. He was part of UFC 100, and now he's going to be a part of UFC 200. The big problem with this whole thing was is that UFC wanted to make the big announcement during UFC 199, but Ariel Helwani got the you know, being a great journalist like he is, he was able to crack the story hours before UFC 199, and that really pissed Dana off. Sorry about saying pissed, but yes.
Yeah, and he temporarily revoked and banned Ariel from the events, as well as a couple of his colleagues.
Yeah, you know, and you know, they made Ariel leave the arena, including his cameraman and the cameraman's wife. And you know, it was, you know, I listened to Ariel's show, and he had his side of the story, and it was a very passionate. You know, you can tell that Ariel really loves the sport, and so he was really hurt. And really devastated. I was really happy when I heard that, you know, Dana and them, you know, cooler heads prevailed and they lifted the ban, because, you know, he deserves to be a part of it. I, you know, in the end, I think with cooler heads prevail, I tip my hat to Dana and Ariel for, you know, making the right decision.
Yeah, Ariel's definitely the epitome of a journalistic standard for MMA, and I'm glad that he's going to be covering these events in the future.
Now, let's talk about the news that was broke. Brock Lesnar coming in to UFC 199, and he's going to be fighting Mark Hunt.
He's going to be fighting at the 200 card, and I'm really
200, yes, 200, thank you.
Yeah, I'm really looking towards that fight. I want to see what Brock has left in him. He feels rejuvenated, and he's done away with some of the injuries that plagued his UFC career in terms of diverticulitis. And we'll see how he faces off against the Samoan Superman, Mark Hunt.
There's a guy that's really – that's a dangerous fight for Brock. Do you think that's too much too soon? What do you think?
Brock's never shied away from a challenge.
He's not afraid of anyone. And I was watching an interview that he had on ESPN, and he just told Dana, just get me a fight. I don't care who it is. It could be for the title. It could be anyone you want. He didn't care who it was. He didn't even need to know who it was. He just wanted to fight.
And he even mentioned that he's embracing the fact that Mark is a heavy hitter, and he admitted that in his true heart of hearts, he is a grappler. So we're going to see that dynamic play off and how it's going to come to a head.
Yeah. Does this make the UFC 200 card, does this catapult this card to, you know, new heights now?
Yeah, it definitely helps with the loss of Conor on that card. This definitely fills in the shoes and a little bit more.
That was my question. Is the card better off with... If you were going to have a choice of UFC 200 with McGregor-Diaz or Brock Lesnar-Mark Hunt?
I think Brock being in the game now and the fact that he can bring in all the people and his fans from wrestling and just the general mainstream eyes, it's going to be that much better than Conor's, but I wish we had both of those fights.
you can't have it all. Here's what I would say. As far as a UFC fan goes, someone who watches UFC on a regular basis, it's a bigger fight. It's a bigger card to me as far as bringing Brock Lesnar in. But as far as pay-per-view dollars, McGregor-Diaz would have been a bigger pay-per-view event. That's my opinion.
I don't know. At UFC 100, they broke so many records that still stand to this day until Conor broke them. But
exactly.
You know, that's a huge card.
Yes, it is. Now, speaking of future cards and Conor McGregor, they also announced that Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz will be fighting on UFC 202. And that's going to be in Vegas. What was your thoughts about that?
I'm excited for it. I'm happy that they finally got that through. I really want to see these men kind of seal the deal on this fight. I mean, if it goes well, there might be a rubber match, but I don't want to see that in the immediate future. I want to see them go back to the divisions, see what's going to happen there, and then maybe down the line finish it off. But, you know, I think it's going to be a closer fight than the previous match. But
I didn't really.
It's gonna be tough.
I was gonna say I don't know if it was really a closer. I mean, it was a close match. I kind of looked at it. It was, I thought it was all Conor McGregor in the beginning, and then Conor got tired and gassed, and then it became Diaz, and then Diaz took him out.
You know, that's how it plays off with the Diazes. I mean, every time they get their opponent swinging, throwing everything they have, trying to get them out of there. But I mean, when you drag it into deep waters and you see with the Diazes being triathlon competitors and just being really fit.